values, and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. Happy Friday. So there are a couple of different headlines that you need to know. We continue to talk about the border and why it's an issue, but we talk about safety at the border, and we should. It should be a safety issue for everyone involved. 387 Border Patrol agents have been assaulted at the border so far this year. We're not even halfway into the year. 387 assaults. Now, this is a big issue. Here's another headline. Migrant accused of instigating the El Paso border riot is still roaming the U.S. despite alleged soldier assault. These are the problems that people are facing. The Border Patrol Council itself, and Brandon Judd's organization. They represent the Border Patrol agents. The idea that we keep hearing that Americans are racist or xenophobic, this is more than that. This is a big safety issue. And 13 House Democrats have joined with Republicans in backing a resolution denouncing the Biden administration's immigration policies. It passed in the House chamber 223 to 191. The Democrat members supportive of the resolution are mostly from competitive seats this fall election, understanding the issue. There's one from Illinois, Colorado, Minnesota, Texas, Kansas, North Carolina, Maine, California, Nevada, Alaska, Washington, and Illinois. Fascinating that none of them are from Arizona. It's not necessarily a criticism as much as an observation that in Arizona, and I want to give some credit here, that there is Greg Stanton, the Democrat, is working with the Republican Juan Ciscomani on legislation. But the idea that you're going to stand up and you're going to say this is wrong is what needs to happen. There is going to be a piece of legislation, a referendum on the ballot. They're trying to get it on the ballot, and hopefully it's going to get there, where the voters of Arizona are going to be able to vote on whether or not we have a law like SB 4 in Texas. Now, it's contingent, and I believe it's even in the referendum. It's contingent on SB 4 standing up to constitutional muster because it's being challenged by the federal government. In Texas, they have passed a law in Texas that says that the state officials can enforce immigration laws, and the state of Texas has the right to not only apprehend and to convict and to deport people that are in the country illegally. It's being challenged by the federal government. So the federal government is saying this is our job. Well, okay, understandably, it is your job. Texas is saying, but if you're not doing your job, we have the right to do it. And that's what's being questioned in court right now. I am someone that is absolutely, without a doubt, 100% in favor of legal immigration. And I will reiterate that every time I talk on this topic. Immigration is who we are. We need a system that is fair. We need a system that works. The Biden administration has got a new finalizing some rules that will open Obamacare up to dreamers. Now, the fight about that is because they're in the country illegally, but this is where the problem lies. And this is maybe where I get off track with some of the people in my political party. I'm not a fan of Obamacare. I never liked it. I don't like the way it works. I don't think it works like they say it works. I think it's way too much money. There's a different direction we can go to fix health insurance. This is not an endorsement of Obamacare. My problem is that we are piecemealing our solution for the dreamers. And here's why. These are adults now, many of them successful in their 30s, working, contributing, raised in American schools, educated on American college campuses, doing professional work. Even if they're not doing professional work, working, contributing members of our society that are not able to live as true Americans. That's an indictment of our system. That's an indictment of the fact that our government turned a blind eye 30 years ago or so, turned a blind eye to the problem. What they did was turn a blind eye and allow people to enter this country illegally, allow them to put down roots, allow them to send their children to American schools and never do anything about it. Never say, yes, you can stay or no, you have to go early in the time they were here. They kicked the can down the road so far that two presidents ago, the Dream Act happened. It was an executive order. It wasn't a piece of legislation. There is no legislation. There is no legal protection. And yet they live like Americans. So we've piecemealed college educations and we've piecemealed this and we've piecemealed that. Now it's going to be access to health care. But there's been no solution to the issue. And right now, as we speak, this president and his failed policies on the border are allowing for the creation of the next generation of dreamers. It is just obvious. In 20 years, 25 years, if I'm still around, we'll be looking at this generation with the however many, half a million plus just unaccompanied minors, never mind the families that have crossed the border, because they keep telling us that the single adult males are being turned around at the border. That's not true either. But the people that they are allowing to stay are largely families. There is no status. They're waiting up to 10 years for a hearing. What are those kids going to be like in 10 years? You've got a family that comes over with a 3-year-old or a couple of kids under the age of 5. And in 10 years, those kids will be either in middle school or high school, having gone to school nowhere but an American school, speaking English and living as Americans. Are we going to throw them out in 10 years when their hearing is done? When the parents get a hearing for their asylum status and they're found to not have a legitimate claim? Well, we're not going to do that. But then what happens with the political pressure if we allow those children citizenship? So we're stuck with the next generation of dreamers. How do we not see this as a problem, an American problem? That's why border security matters. Securing the border so that we know who's coming and going, so that we can have rules and laws in place that are fair. We are not sending dreamers out of this country. And yet our government refuses to put together legislation that gives them citizenship, that gives them the right to live as Americans. So what ends up happening is they live their lives in limbo because the American government won't make a decision one way or another. They know that if they say that they have to leave this country, that there is going to be an uproar across this country that is going to be horrible, that we're kicking people out to live their entire lives as Americans. If you give them citizenship, there's another segment of our society that are saying you are rewarding bad behavior. So what they continue to do is kick the can down the road. And go back to my original point. The border is so overwhelmed right now and people are so bold in what they're doing. There have been almost 400 assaults on Border Patrol agents. These are the men and women that are sworn to protect us. These are the men and women that are sworn to control the border. Now, we know Border Patrol patrols outside of the ports of entry. CBP, Customs and Border Protection, protect the ports of entry. So Border Patrol are dealing with people that are circumventing the ports of entry. They're being assaulted. Why is it that we are saying that this is acceptable? It isn't. It is not acceptable. Coming up, we're going to talk about the Gilbert Goons. It's official. They're a gang. What does that mean? And we'll talk about that coming up in just a moment.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
All right. Thanks for being here. Yesterday, big press conference in the East Valley as they got together to tell the community that the Gilbert Goons are officially a criminal gang. And what does that mean? I want you to hear a little bit of this because they said they've been labeled as a hybrid gang. I'm not sure what a hybrid gang is, but what's the difference? Here's the first part of this.
As you know, your traditional gang usually has one race or one ethnicity, and they have a territory that they claim. Hybrid gangs are usually mixed gender, mixed races, and all various ages. Also, your traditional gang has a code of conduct, typically. Hybrid gangs are mostly juvenile gangs, and they have no code of conduct or no hierarchy. The members also claim and participate in multiple gangs in your hybrid gangs. This is done to stall law enforcement on a documentation process where traditional gangs, they stuck to their territory or their barrios or whatever they have, and they were proud of their gang name.
I'm really trying here. A hybrid gang. They go on to talk about the differences between a gang and a hybrid gang.
Hybrid gangs also work with other criminal gangs that you may not see. You may see a car full of different gang members together in a hybrid gang, where traditionally you wouldn't see that. There's no specific colors, symbols, hand signs, territories, or anything such as that in a hybrid gang, where traditional gangs usually had a standard color, a gang sign, or something to that.
Maybe they're like the All-Stars. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe these are the All-Star members. They should call them an All-Star gang, because, you know, normally you've got a high school football team and then you take the best players and they play in the All-Star game. East versus West, North versus South, and you have an All-Star. Maybe these are the All-Stars. Maybe these are the gang, the East Valley gang All-Stars. So when they're together in a car, maybe it's an All-Star gang they're going for. So what happens? The chief of police, Chief Solberg, talking about this, how will this change what's happening?
In this case, as you mentioned, we are unable to charge these individuals that are in both of these gangs with additional charges of participating or assisting in a criminal street gang.
Here's the issue. I've had a great privilege over the last couple of years to get to socialize a little bit and meet gang cops. It's no joke. The career they've chosen puts them in danger every single day of their lives, on and off duty, and their families too. And they risk their lives to keep a lid on gang violence. And Arizona has grown by leaps and bounds. And the reason why we don't hear more about gang violence is because the gang investigators, ASGIA, the Arizona Gang Investigators Association, they are a tight-knit group of people that don't have big egos about their job. They share information and they do what they can to make sure that these violent, horrible human beings that would prey on anybody cannot prey upon you or me. And they're doing everything they can to arrest them using the laws that are in place. So I'm not trying to make fun, but a bunch of punk idiots. Now, they are violent. They're dangerous. I'm not diminishing any of that. But a gang designation for a bunch of punks in Gilbert, is this going to embolden them? Is this now going to give them what they're looking for, is street cred? Mostly, not all, but upper middle class to wealthy punks that have no parental supervision. What good is it going to do if they can't add charges, if it's not going to do? I don't understand what the point of this was. I really don't. And I am immensely pro law enforcement, and half of me wants to make so many jokes about this. And the other part of me is looking at this and just shrugging my shoulders and say, why would you have a press conference to say we're calling them a gang, but they're not really a gang? They're more of a hybrid gang. They're not this and they're not that, and they're not organized and they're not loyal, and it's not territorial and it's not this. So it's kind of this. It's a little bit of that. Oh, and by the way, it's not going to change anything. We're not going to charge anybody with, and there are no added charges. There's no enhanced charges, although maybe the county attorney can do that at some level using these laws. But then what happens when they're challenged? What happens when the defense goes back to this press conference and says, what in the world is a hybrid gang? If you look at organized crime, and that's what this is talking about, organized crime. New York is famous for having the crime families in New York. And sometimes you were what was considered to be a made guy. You were somebody that was a part of this criminal enterprise, and you were known to be, and you're a gang member, and you're in the mafia, so to speak. La Cosa Nostra, you are a member. And there are others that are just criminals, and they're not. When you look at biker gangs, you look at the Hells Angels. You're a Hells Angel or you're not. They have people called a hang around. These are people that they allow to hang around with them, but they have absolutely no connection to them whatsoever. until they become a prospect, and then they become a full patch member. And but at the same time, this sounds like a bunch of hangarounds. This sounds like a bunch of people loosely knit together. They get together. Sometimes they jump in one guy's car. Another time they jump in another guy's car. I understand you want to stop this. I think it's admirable. I love the way that the East Valley Police Departments have come together since this happened 6 months ago or so, when they found out information and the work they're doing here. I don't understand what this is. A hybrid gang. Okay. I don't know what was accomplished yesterday. If anything, I would say that these kids that are in the middle of all of this stuff, that think they're hard, that think they're street hard, are getting more from this that say, oh, wow, now the cops think we're a gang. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'll hear from my cop buddies and I'll hear from them why this was an important thing to do. But it didn't set off a lot of alarms with me. And we'll see how it feels to others. What we're going to do in a moment is our continuing quest to keep you as informed voters. We're going to be talking to candidates. So biggest county in Arizona, I think the fourth biggest county in the country, is Maricopa County, the Maricopa County Attorney's Office, and a candidate that is running against Rachel Mitchell in the Republican primary. Her name is Gina Godbehere. She's going to join us at 9:35, so please stick around for it.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. I appreciate you spending some time with us. Happy Friday from the show. We want to help you be informed voters. We're going to go to KTAR.com, subscribe to the YouTube channel for KTAR News. We're going to try to do everything we can to have you be an informed voter this voting season. The primary is rapidly approaching us, and in the Republican race to be the county attorney, we've got the incumbent. We know that is Rachel Mitchell. But in the Maricopa County Attorney's Office, there is a challenger, and that is Gina Godbehere. She joins us now. Gina, welcome to the show.
Thank you. A pleasure to be here.
Let's start with running against an incumbent from your own party. Why the challenge? What motivated you to challenge for the office?
Now, I was asked to run for this position by so many victims, law enforcement officers, and member strong Republicans who know the current county attorney has become basically a Democrat. She's trying to maintain the disguise of a Republican, and she's using the office and resources as a political machine with her press conferences. But what the public doesn't know is she is at the beck and call of a Democratic governor, a Democratic attorney general, and a staff who influence policy and dictate to her these liberal policies that are hurting victims, demoralizing police, emboldening criminals, and leading us down a path of lawlessness.
Did you ever have a good relationship with Rachel Mitchell? Did you speak at events together, or did you work with her at events?
This is not personal with Rachel. I've worked with Rachel for 25 years in the Maricopa County Attorney's Office. This is about policy and the direction of the office. And when that comes to policy, I completely disagree with the current policies that are silencing victims, not holding offenders accountable, and putting our community and police officers at risk. That is the reason I'm running. It is not personal for Rachel at all.
So what needs to change in your mind immediately, day one in office, if you were to win the office, what needs to change?
Day one in office, we need to stop the dangerous diversion policies that are in place. We need to stop downgrading so many felonies to misdemeanors and sending them to the cities. The best example of that is that Goodyear bicyclist case. How, Mike, and I know you are a cyclist, how do you drive over 19 people, killing two, and not brake for over 5 seconds and not have any felony charges? When you downgrade felonies to misdemeanors and send them to the city, where cities do not have the ability to put people on supervised probation, you put these communities at risk.
One of the things that Ms. Mitchell has said that they've done in her office is they have asked for and are getting higher bonds now for people. What do you think about the bonds that are being requested and gotten? Is that adequate in the office, or do you think that's part of the issue as well?
You know, back under the Andrew Thomas regime, we started putting attorneys in IA court and asking for higher bonds. It is absolutely imperative that we do that. It's something that we have been fighting for decades. But of greater concern is the fact that the county attorney has ability to use enhancements while on probation, while on parole, while on release, to make people non-bondable and hold them accountable. And the current county attorney under Rachel Mitchell is not utilizing the enhancements under the law. Instead, we have a revolving door, and it is their policies that are contributing to that.
When you look at some of the big cases that are out there right now, I mean, obviously the county attorney's office has been in the front of a lot of different things because of the high profile cases we've seen, crime, tourism and others. What role do you see in that? The speaking to the community and making sure there's the community understands what the office is doing.
The community should always understand, and I'm a big proponent of community-based prosecution, where we should be actively in the community. In the Gilbert Goons case, the county attorney was silent for months. That community was upset. They were looking for answers. They were looking for solutions. Under the old, previous administrations, the Bill Montgomery administrations, we would have been in that community working proactively with law enforcement and with the community to encourage those students to actually speak up. And if those videos were shown and discovered earlier, we could have prevented some of those tragedies.
As far as, and by the way, Gina Godby here is joining us. She is a Republican candidate for Maricopa County Attorney. As far as staffing goes, we know staffing has been an issue. And then because there were a lot of cases and backlog when Ms. Mitchell took the office, how is staffing now with the Maricopa County Attorney's Office and the relationship and rapport with law enforcement in the county?
You know, the interesting thing with staffing that nobody is talking about, including especially my opponent, is that talented prosecutors continue to flee the Maricopa County Attorney's Office. Good prosecutors, just like good law enforcement officers, they cannot stomach policies that favor defendants more than victims, and they cannot stomach a two-tiered system of justice that we're seeing. And the best example of that is the Charles Ryan case. When talent leaves, the community loses, and that has not been addressed at the county attorney's office, and it has to be addressed. Law enforcement is sickened by the amount of good prosecutors who continue to leave the county attorney's office because they want to work with talented, experienced prosecutors to ensure that victims get the justice they deserve. And that's just not happening. And that is a lack of leadership.
And see, that's where, and that's why I'm asking for clarification, because one of the things that Rachel Mitchell has said is that they have improved staffing, that staffing is increased since she took the office. And there is a much better relationship between her prosecutors and the law enforcement agencies that they work with.
You know, Mike, and I know you're a strong supporter of law enforcement, and you hear from law enforcement across the county. And I would just tell you this, they have continued to hire, and they will, but they're also losing the most talented, experienced prosecutors in that office. And that should concern everyone. I know it's a concern of law enforcement. And if you ask the people on the streets, they will tell you that the relationship is not there. They're not communicating with victims. Currently, I'm a victim's rights attorney, and every day we're getting calls from victims who are upset in our community. I know the office policy said victims serve. They're not talking about victims who are dissatisfied or officers who are frustrated with so many cases being turned down, furthered, and sent to the cities as misdemeanors. And that has not improved. That has gotten worse. That is why, even though I only jumped in 2 months ago, I've already been endorsed by the Scottsdale Police Department, and I've been supported by law enforcement across Maricopa County.
When you look, and I know I've asked a little bit of this, but I'd like to get some specificity from you on the importance of cases. What are the priorities of the office? When you look at this with the staffing issues as they exist, and they might exist if you took the office, what are the priorities when you walk in? What are the cases that deserve the most attention?
Violent crimes, no doubt. Violent crimes, assaults on a police officer. If someone will assault a police officer, they will assault anyone. These individuals should not get plea agreements, yet that is happening under my opponent's watch. In fact, even individuals who are pointing guns at officers, who are shooting at officers, they are getting pleas where the officers are objecting. That never happened in my 25 years working as a prosecutor. The best example of that is your Charles Ryan case. How can you point a gun at police officers for over 15 seconds and get probation with no jail? It shows we have a two-tiered system of justice, and the county attorney is willing to give sweetheart deals to political insiders, and that should concern everyone. And I want to point, Mike, the biggest issue in that case is your victim officers, law enforcement officers, asked the court to reject the plea and were upset and frustrated that that plea was made, and their voices were not heard. They were silenced by the county attorney's office.
If people want to learn more about your campaign, what is there a website, social media pages? How can they find more about your campaign?
Thank you. I just want to tell Mike, thank you for having me. I've been a public servant for 28 years, and the only way I know to truly protect this community, the victims and law enforcement, is to become the next county attorney and stop these dangerous policies that are leading us to become cities that we see in the every day in the news, like Chicago, New York, San Francisco. I look forward to speaking to you more. And for anyone who wants to learn more about me, please visit my website, GinaForJustice.com, or follow me at Twitter at Gina GodbeHere.
Gina, it's good to talk to you again, and I hope to talk to you soon.
Thank you. Hope to talk to you soon. Bye.
Thanks. That is Gina GodbeHere. She is a Republican candidate for county attorney. We're going to have, obviously, as many candidates in these big, important races as we can get on the air in the coming days. Coming up in a moment, hundreds of affordable apartments are coming up in Phoenix, are going to be available. Who's going to qualify to rent them, and where will they be? We'll talk about that coming up here in just one moment.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
We have had a conversation, and many of us have been having conversations about affordable housing for a long time. We've had a lot of guests on the show talking on the topic, from ASU professors and experts in business management to home builders to members of the government, speaking on how we can get more affordable housing here. And a lot of it is obviously supply and demand. How do we get the supply up? There's a story from AZ Central that says hundreds of affordable apartments are coming to Phoenix for residents with disabilities, those experiencing chronic homelessness, and senior citizens. One of the largest and fastest growing groups of people experiencing homelessness or older adults. They have fixed incomes, and we have seen this rapid rise in costs, and the income adjustments on their Social Security and other benefits are not keeping up with what's happening. And many of them are finding themselves needing food assistance, which I'm going to get to in a moment, but also in housing. So the city council approved an $8 million in federal funding for five projects that will build a total of 279 affordable apartments across Phoenix. At each of the complex residents, income limits are capped at 60% of the area's median income, with 11 or more units at each location set aside for those making 40% of the area's median income. So there's two different sets of rules here. So the income caps mean 224 of the units will house individuals making less than $39,300 per year, 55 apartments making less than $26,200 annually, and the funding comes from the Housing and Urban Development, from HUD. It is a little confusing when you start looking at the numbers of who is this is going to help. And I have an issue with how confusing it is. And let me take a side track for just a moment. When it comes to food assistance, St. Mary's Food Bank is doing their annual letter carriers food drive. So here's the headline. Arizona letter carriers come together to help stamp out hunger during the 32nd annual food drive held on Saturday, May 11th. This drive annually collects 2 million pounds of food returns for 2024. It benefits St. Mary's Food Bank and many other food banks around the state. So what you do is, on this day, you're going to leave non-perishable food items at your mailbox, and the letter carriers are going to make sure that it gets picked up. So on Saturday, May 11th, over 230,000 letter carriers nationwide, including 5,000 here in the Valley, will pick up canned food donations at the regular mail routes during the 32nd annual National Association of Letter Carriers Stamp Out Hunger Food Drive. The reason why I'm mentioning this with housing is, once again, it's a private organization, St. Mary's Food Bank, and it's very simple. They say to you, we need your help. We need your help to feed hungry people. We are going to make a promise to you, and you're going to be able to watch and see. We are going to make sure that the vast majority of our resources goes to exactly that, feeding people. We are going to buy as many many meals as we possibly can for a dollar. We're going to use as many volunteers as we can to keep our employee costs down. We're going to be efficient with our volunteers that when they show up, they're going to feel like they're accomplishing a real job, that they're going to do valuable work. And we are going to make sure the people in our community don't go hungry because they can't afford to buy healthy food. And they've been keeping that promise. I call them the OG. They're the original food, original gangsters of helping people with excellent food. They're the original food bank. So my point is, private organizations have done this. You look at what St. Vincent de Paul does with homelessness. Now, they work in so many other areas. Hunger is another one of them. The largest commercial kitchen, I believe, in Arizona still is St. Vincent de Paul. But these private organizations rely on the kindness of people. You donating your time. If you show up at St. Mary's Food Bank to donate your time or St. Vincent de Paul and you leave there thinking, I stood around for an hour, they didn't take me seriously, we didn't do much, you're not going to go back. They know your time is valuable. When you donate your money, and you can go online, go to St. Mary's Food Bank. If you want to help with this, you want to leave food out for the letter carriers, that's great. But if you want to know that your money's going somewhere and it's going to be stretched, every penny is going to be squeezed out of every dollar, you know these organizations do it because they realize if they are not efficient with your dollars, you'll take them away. I'm not condemning the government. I'm glad the government is trying to do something. They're going to build 279 affordable units. There are going to be all these restrictions and hoops you have to jump through. That's all necessary. But if we are going to address this problem, it's going to take more than government entities giving grants and building apartments. It's going to take loosening the strings, getting rid of the red tape, and making sure that investors and developers can build these things faster and get the prices down because there's more units out there. Build them smaller, build them on smaller lots, single family homes, all of these things that can get people off the street. That's the way it's done with private entities. You want to help hungry people? St. Mary's Food Bank is giving you another opportunity by leaving canned goods at your mailbox on the 11th. Period. Simple. End of story. That's the simplicity of private organizations finding unique and clever ways to allow people to give to great organizations. Those are the bigger things, bigger parts of the solution. Again, it's not a condemnation of the good people in government, and there are a lot of them that are trying to help. But the solutions lie in the community and private organizations that are better equipped to do these things. And St. Mary's Food Bank, on the food assistance part of this, is stellar, along with others. And they're not the only food bank that is going to benefit from this, and they say that in their pieces of literature. Letter carriers across the valley picking up food to make sure food bank shelves are stocked so that hungry people can find the meal that they're looking for. Just after 10 o'clock, we are going to do our ballot breakdown like we do every day. We're going to talk about the trial of President Trump. Is it hurting his chances to win re-election? We'll talk about that coming up here in just a moment.